This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
This is an ENN special report. Now reporting.
Peter Rosenberg!
ENN's at 6.
When the clock struck 6, it meant one thing.
I'm one of the greatest broadcasters on planet Earth.
And I know that's hearsay here. It's
not hearsay, it's not heresy. Hearsay.
Now, from the ESPN New York news desk, here's
Rosenbaum or whatever that guy's name is.
No wonder your show is number one.
So it's Andrew Gundling hosting ENN for this evening. Peter is here, though, so if you're tuning in hoping for Peter, you will get Peter. This ENN and Summer Fridays with the Michael Kay Show on 98.7 ESPN are brought to you by new Mike's Hard Lemonade Seltzer, 100 calories, 1 gram of sugar, and gluten-free. Let's say hello to Don.
Hot for teacher, that's Van Halen.
Let's say hello to Peter.
Uptown girl, she's been living in her uptown world.
It almost sounds like you really like that song. I kind of like how that comes off.
But it's funny because I know you're right. It does sound like I like
you're
it.
You're so into it.
Yeah.
But
weird.
In fact, I was insulting it because I'm not a fan.
Let's say hello to actually Don one more time.
Let Ice-T follow you naturally.
And one more from Don, as a matter of fact.
I legitimately killed a guy and knew that it was him.
Wow. Ruthless. All right, guys, we start ENN tonight. This is actually, I would say, sometimes early July, mid-July, it's kind of viewed as like sort of the dog days, a downtime in sports, but that is very much not the case. This is a sneaky, massive weekend in sports.
Oh, it's massive.
There's a lot. So let's go through it. We'll start with this. For UFC fans, it's going to be UFC 264 this weekend.
Well, you're going out of order. I don't like what you're doing already.
What do you mean?
You're jumping the order. There's something.
I didn't know there was an order.
I mean the timeline.
Oh. Well, yeah. Then I am going out of order.
Okay, go ahead.
We're starting with UFC. UFC 264 this weekend at T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas. It's going to be the first pay-per-view event in front of a full crowd in Las Vegas since UFC 246, which was all the way back in January of 2020. You can see it this Saturday on ESPN+. Dustin Poirier, Conor McGregor, both weighed in at 156 pounds. Peter, I'll defer to you. I saw it somewhere that this is among the most highly anticipated rubber matches in UFC history. Is that fair?
Yes, absolutely it is. First of all, it's on ESPN+ pay-per-view. I don't want anyone to show up thinking they're getting it, because if you were to watch one of the many commercials that airs for Disney+, where you would think the only three characters that exist in Disney's company is Simba from The Lion King, Stephen A. Smith, and Conor McGregor, I just want people to know, you have to pay to see Conor. But this fight is incredible. I'm going to fork over my money for it. First of all, they split the first two. In the last fight, I mean, Conor was just seriously whooped by Dustin Poirier. And for Conor, he is an absolutely transcendent star. I think we can all agree, based on how you guys hear about him when he's fighting, based on the hoopla around his fights, like this weekend, the amount of celebrities that will be there, the parties, everything. Conor McGregor is the Mike Tyson of UFC. As big as the UFC is, he moves the needle like nobody else. And this is a big fight for him, because if he loses for the second time in a row to Poirier, and I think that would make it 3 out of 4 fights overall that he's lost, he's obviously going to get fights. But you start to think, are his best days behind him, and now he's just fighting to collect checks. So it's a very big fight on Saturday night.
So McGregor and Stephen A. had a conversation, actually. Great interview. You can see it. Here's Conor McGregor from that interview talking about what happened in their last fight.
There was weight on the scales given. There were shots in the octagon given. There was plugs and support given. There's nothing free given this time. Everything is getting took, and that's the mindset here.
Is that why you lost?
Yeah, I would say so. There's a few things. I pitied the man, to be honest with you. I was looking past him. I had a Manny Pacquiao camp in place.
Listen, a little bit of excuse making from Conor. The interesting thing about this is I've decided this fight is essentially the battle of great guys. Because Dustin Poirier is a longtime great guy who people really love. And the new character of Conor McGregor over like the last year and a half is great guy. So I'm curious to see which one will persevere. But I do think this is a tough situation for Conor, who in Poirier clearly has met his match. And if he loses, like I said, it just sort of changes the trajectory moving forward for Conor McGregor.
Well, here's Dana White on ESPN.com talking about what a win would mean for Conor McGregor.
He'll go down as one of the greatest of all time, you know, to have lost the belt, gone through the things that happened with him personally, professionally, then to come back again, beat the number one contender who just beat him, and then fight for the title and win. I mean, it's just financially, it's off the charts, and professionally, it's off the charts. It's just... It would make him go down in history as one of the great all-time greats.
I saw Dana earlier today was actually doing an interview in front of the post office on 79th Street. A homeless man was holding up a microphone, and he just sprinted and said, I saw a microphone. I had to say, Conor is going to win. The man loves an interview.
Just a heads up, by the way, Myron Metcalf and Charlie Arnold, they're going to be hosting a special MMA show tomorrow from 4 to 6 p.m. right here on 98.7 ESPN New York. So
Charlie Arnold, that's formerly Charlie Caruso of WWE to you and me.
Is that right?
Yes, she's gone back to her real name of Charlie Arnold. But, yeah, it's Charlie Caruso in WWE.
All right, well, there you go. So that's one massive sports event this weekend.
What else?
Still going way out of order. NBA Finals will resume on Sunday with the Milwaukee Bucks in full-on unofficial must-win mode as the Suns took a 2-0 series lead yesterday. Bucks are 1-15 all-time in best-of-seven series when trailing 2-0. However, the only time that they did it was just this year against Brooklyn. Guys, I don't know. I would say in looking at the series so far, specifically game two, shot making sometimes matters. It's so cliche, but sometimes it's like Chris Middleton and Drew Holiday combined to shoot 12 of 37 in game two. It's the worst combined field goal percentage by starting backcourt in a finals game since 2000 when Kobe and Ron Harper shot 30%. Mm. Meanwhile, it felt like every time the Bucks got close, Devin Booker hit a three. So just sometimes that's what it comes down to, shot making. Kendrick Perkins was on KJZ this morning, and while the Suns are playing well, he seems to think that this is more about the Bucks, and this is pretty harsh from him.
They have to pick their IQ up. Right now, it's so disturbing to watch the Bucks play on the offensive end and defensive end. Matter of fact, they might be the dumbest team in finals history. I mean, they're so frustrating to watch. When you watch their lack of accountability on the defensive side of things, not being able to stay consistent in what they're doing, guys are not trusting one another. Offensively, you heard Budenholzer before the game started. He said, play random, have fun. Spread the floor, play freely. And that's what the Bucks do. No sense of urgency, just play freely like they're at Rucker Park. That's not going to get it. I don't know what they could change because, look, you can't develop an IQ overnight.
Mm-hmm. Pretty harsh.
Everyone wants to beat them up. Well, you know what? Let's wait and see. Let's see.
I don't know that I took that as a specific shot at Giannis, if that's what
you're implying. No, just the Bucks. Just the Bucks. Well, but guess what? The Bucks stops here. But when I say the Bucks stops here, I mean the Suns. Just think about that. Go ahead.
I know you think, Peter, that the Bucks are they have Phoenix right where they want them, right?
Oh, yeah. This was all a plan. I believe it's a rare rope-a-dope situation in the NBA Finals. The Bucks wanted to get down 2-0, get everyone invested, and then push this thing to minimum six games. I really don't believe that. But I do feel that everyone has a tendency in these series to have to jump on the radio the day after and go, look how over it is. Phoenix was dominant. And by the way, they're not wrong. I never thought Milwaukee would win when I was watching game one. I never thought they'd win last night. They did get it close in the fourth quarter, made it interesting, but the second they did, it got blown right back open. I just feel, though, they've been so good in Milwaukee. Before we hit the panic button, let's just watch game three on Sunday night.
I think it's over, but I will say this. As far as that stat of 89% of the teams that are up 2-0 win the series, Well, that's because usually the team with home court is the better team with a better record, and they hold serve. And it's usually a sport, historically, that it's very difficult to win on the road. So it kind of makes sense that when you fall behind 2-0, that you lose the series 89% of the time because you're not going to be able to win that game on the road that you need. I would think a lot of the teams that were up 2-0, Peter, were probably favorites in the series, mm-hmm. and that's why that stat is so weighed heavily. But I think this is a little bit evener a series than you've probably seen in recent history. We have seen in recent history teams win on the road. I just don't know if this Bucks team is going to be able to win a game five or a game seven, but I think that's why it's so high at 89%.
That's a really good point I think about,
yeah.
is that every time it's 2-0, it's the team that had home court advantage.
Right. Makes sense. Let's see. Also, guys, a couple of very big soccer trophies going to be handed out this weekend.
Go ahead.
Saturday night, Brazil-Argentina to decide Copa America, and then Sunday afternoon on ABC, England and Italy at Wembley Stadium. Great matchups. I mean, and what would you – I mean, in terms of identifiable sports venues – Wembley Stadium, the Maracanã in Brazil. I mean, with Brazil, Argentina, and England, Italy in these games, it's a great weekend for soccer fans. I know this is.
Well, let me ask you a more direct question, Andrew.
Okay.
Better rivalry of the two?
Brazil, Argentina.
Is Brazil, Argentina for international soccer rivalries number one?
Well, I mean, you can go. That's probably the most high profile. You know, you have some others like, you know, England, Scotland. But, you know, that's fairly one-sided. Brazil-Argentina is... Yeah,
it's been pretty Brazil-dominant over the last 30, 40 years, though, no?
Ooh, over 30 or 40 years? I don't know.
Well, going back to when was
Argentina's... I mean, Argentina had that run where they won the World Cup in, what was it, 78 and 86. So they haven't won since then.
Since 86.
Right. So, yeah, Brazil, in terms of winning World Cups and Copa Americas, yeah, Brazil has had the upper hand. But I think all time, I think Brazil only has I think it's something like 39 wins to 38 wins and 25 draws. It's all time. It's very close between them.
And Wembley is iconic, not just for sports, but, you know, that's where Live Aid was. And when you think of venues, it's in the top 10 easy.
Yeah.
10
in the world.
Oh,
maybe
yeah.
top 5
I
in the world.
Five.
And I don't know, is there another one overseas that's close?
I think tell me the hands down winner anywhere over Wembley.
So to me it's probably number 1.
I think it's number 1.
Yeah, you're probably right.
And for England to be playing in this final in Wembley, it's the first final of any kind of a major tournament that they've been in since they won the World Cup in England in 1966. So there's so much riding on it.
We really don't, because we don't spend a lot of time talking about soccer, we really don't talk about how, Don, if you ever do a list of biggest franchises or teams, I should say, because it's not a franchise in this case, but most popular teams and most iconic teams who have gone the longest without a sniff, I mean, there's been so much England disappointment ever since I even started paying attention to soccer. It's really only been disappointment. Great, beloved players, and Andrew failing in all the big spots. It
Always.
Is a huge game.
It's what they're known for. Now, this generation has proven to be different because they went to a semifinal at the 2018 World Cup, and now they've capitalized on that by going to a final at the very next major tournament in this European Championship. So I think this group is proving to, even if they don't win this, I think they've already proven that they're different than some of the past disappointments. But with this being at Wembley in England... I can't even describe how badly they want this.
And how bad a loss would be. I mean, but at least a win would be.
At least Italy is also a great team. So I think like the fans might be able to stomach it a little bit more. I think they would still look back on this as being a fun tournament. Like if England had lost in the semifinals to Denmark, that might have ruined whatever good feelings there might have been. Because that was also in Wembley and a team that England always would think they'd be beating. Losing to Italy, I don't know. It's pretty even, so I think that people could see that is a possibility.
Now, how much does Wembley take a hit? Because it's not the original. It's on the same site, but they imploded the original and then rebuilt it in 2002.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I guess, you know, how much does your thoughts on Yankee Stadium change from one to the other?
Listen, Yankee fans will kill me. It's not Yankee Stadium.
Yeah.
As you know it. It's not. It's not even on the exact same site. It's over a little bit. You know, at least I guess Wembley's in the exact same spot because they imploded and didn't play for over a year and reconstructed in the same area. But no, how could it be? It's a different building.
Right. That's true.
You know, so I don't it's got to take a hit. It just I think it just has to. Cuz I get are you going to put
well, so then
put
what
Yankee
are you putting
Stadium on
it?
That list then?
For most identifiable venues worldwide?
Well, I mean, you could say identifiable, yes, but I'm saying like historic venues. I mean, Yankee Stadium was in 2009.
Well, what would it be in the what would be the United States' representative? The Rose Bowl?
Yeah, I guess the you'd have to say the Rose Bowl.
Rose Bowl ain't Wembley.
Lambeau.
Lambeau's – but Lambeau only has history for one thing.
True. I mean, Fenway Park?
Is Madison Square Garden?
Well, no, of course. Well, Garden's right there. Yeah.
The Garden has to be there. Now, again, it's not the original Garden, but it's been there since 68. Iconic things happened since 68 there.
Let me tell you something.
It's the world's most famous arena, according
to Let me tell you something. No one outside of here who pays attention knows that there was another Garden. This is the Garden. And Don, over the last – granted, there hasn't been a ton of glorious basketball. But when you think of all the shows, all the events, I mean – Garden and Wembley, to me, are probably one and two.
It's the thing that the scary thing is we lost them all like in a 20-year span, right? Boston Garden gone, Maple Leaf Garden's gone, Chicago Stadium gone. You know, but you've got Wrigley, you've got Fenway. Heck, even Shea Stadium was iconic when you think of the Beatles playing there, the Police playing there. Like, that was a great musical venue, Shea Stadium.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network. All lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
Man, yeah. All this, you know what? All this talk about great arenas and Madison Square Garden feels like the right time. Caller number six right now, 1-888-987-3776. That's 1-888-987-ESPN, a four-pack of tickets to Friday Night SmackDown at MSG. It's going down Friday, September 10th. All the superstars of SmackDown, plus a bunch from Raw, are going to be there as well. But most importantly, your Universal Champion, the head of the table, Roman Reigns, will be there. Bianca Belair, the women's champion of SmackDown, will be there. And so will you for tickets right now. Tickets on sale at Ticketmaster. But you can win them by calling 888-987-3776, all from your home for the hookup, 98.7 ESPN.
Let's see. Also this weekend, one other thing to get to, the Wimbledon finals, both women's and men's.
That's right.
Yeah, Novak Djokovic, a five-time Wimbledon champ, will be going for number six against Matteo Berrettini. That's on Sunday. On the women's side, Ashley Barty will face Carolina Pliskova. That is on Saturday. Mm-hmm. So, I mean...
And Joker's going for Grand Slam 20, I believe.
Yeah.
That's an iconic place, too.
Yeah, it really is.
You know what? It's a great... The tennis ones, actually... Three of the four tennis ones are gigantic.
Which one being the outsider, the Australian Open?
As always, the Australian Open.
Yeah.
And by the way, I mean, now we're going beyond like concert venues, et cetera. But then if you're just talking about iconic places for sporting events, obviously you got to throw Augusta into the conversation too.
That's true.
No, I wouldn't do it.
Of course you wouldn't.
Guys, kind of a bizarre moment at the Scottish Open while we're talking about golf.
Oh, my gosh.
So a fan snuck onto the tee and grabbed a club from Rory McIlroy's bag. Some amazing footage of the incident has surfaced. Here is actual audio of the fan as McIlroy's walking away from the tee box after the club was taken.
Hey, shooter, haven't you forgotten your 9-iron?
Wow, powerful!
That's great. Now, and Michael would advocate Peter that they would be filled within the right to take the club back and then beat him over the head till he was dead with it, because he had the audacity to run onto the
now listen,
course.
Now, listen, are things out of control? Yes. This one's crazy. A fan tried to get in the ring during AEW on Wednesday night and got punched by Chris Jericho. This guy lined up. He took the club. Now, the best thing is, if you guys were upset about, if I was upset about the response to Patrick Beverley pushing Chris Paul, you really got to be upset about this. They literally are like, hey, sir, can you please put the club back?
McIlroy looks so confused. Well, because, Peter, the guy does this with such confidence. There's almost a moment where you're watching it where you think he's supposed to be there as he's taking
the
club.
And now a rules guy is talking to him as if he's a player. They're having a chat. He hands the club back. He does not want to hand back the club cover. He gets that. Okay, he has to give that back too. And then he's escorted away. I have never seen a softer response. Now, listen, I prefer this to getting his head taken off.
But it's not good. Just watching it, I'm waiting for somebody to jump up. I thought he was one of the players. Exactly. I was waiting for somebody to jump over that fence and take it.
You thought this wasn't it?
Yeah, I didn't think it was it. I was waiting for some, lunatic to jump over the fence and grab it and run. Oh, there might have been something wrong with the guy. I almost admire it. That guy, I think that's the exact response you should have for somebody that does it the way he did it.
You mean simply go over to him and be like, hey, this isn't going to happen, and then escort him off?
Yeah.
If this was a football game, some 300-pound dude with a walkie-talkie would be sprinting and just barrel into him and nearly kill him.
Listen, I know we're up against it, but really quick, if it's somebody that had a senior moment or whatever, that could be a silver alert.
Oh, man.
And the guy is just a, I'm serious. He's a golfer. He forgets where he is. He thinks he's golf. I think they did the right thing.
Well, there you go. That is ENN for tonight and for this week.
Woo. Terrific job, Andrew. You do better than Peter, but Peter's a tremendous guy.
No, I'm a great guy, but Andrew does a great job.
Dan Grasso coming up next with Willie Colon. See you, everybody. Talk to you on Monday.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoons starting at 2 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.